From the Lynn to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 20th day of August, 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with University of Missouri's Ben Brown, and I'll bring you up to speed on what the Pro Farmer Crop Tour Scouts found in Ohio and South Dakota yesterday, and what they're finding today in Nebraska and Indiana.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
September corn for the day settled at $3.75 even, down 3 cents. December, the new crop 2 1/4 lower at $3.98, and March corn at $4.17 3/4, down a penny and a half. September beans up 1 at $9.57 1/4. New crop November unchanged today at $9.76, and January soybeans at $9.94 1/4, down 0.25 cents. Bean meal futures up 60 cents, and the bean oil 24 cents higher for the day. Ben Brown, agricultural economist with University of Missouri, an extension there, along with FAPRI, the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute, now joins us. Hello, Ben. Thanks for being with us again.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Todd. Appreciate it.
It was good to see you last week, by the way, on the Purdue campus.
Yeah, we got to see each other in person. And certainly, I love the Midwest Ag Outlook Forum. It's one of my favorite events of the year when all of our colleagues from the different states get together and just sit in a room and hash things out, right? It's always enjoyable.
So. Was there any big takeaway from that for you?
So it was interesting. I came back and my boss asked me, you know, he was like, how'd it go? And he asked if I had learned anything new. And I told him, I said, yeah, there were some interesting like points that different people made related to things that I don't focus on a whole lot. So I think of the livestock sector and talking about some of the issues in the pork sector. You know, I found a lot of that interesting, and I don't follow that as closely as what I probably should. But on the grain side, I kind of knew the story, right? Like I knew the story, I knew the data points for a lot of this stuff. So there wasn't much on the grain side that really surprised me. However, I think what did strike me is when you put that many people together with, you know, different takes of the same story, it was kind of depressing in some senses of in terms of how, you know, how bearish we all are on, I think, grain markets, at least this year and potentially even next year. And not to say that was, you know, that's wrong or that we're too bearish. But it was just one of those things that time after time again, it just, we were looking at really low margins and returns for producers. And I knew that going in. I think all of our producers know that going in, but you know, after the fifth speaker or whatever, it was kind of like, man, I'm almost sad. So
that's the same takeaway I had. There was wide agreement, especially with Lance Honig being up first in the morning on Thursday from USDA, talking about the size of this year's crop and the projections. And no one in the industry, the farm, or from the ag econ side, really debating how big this crop is and what that means as it's related to price.
Yeah. Now there's problems. There is problems in the crop in different places around the country. Certainly, I think disease pressure in some cases is an issue, and you know there are washout spots. But I think we have to sit here and say, yeah, we can see those problems, but in general, this crop looks very good.
Yeah, and the crop tour is out this week.
Mm-hmm.
They probably tried to point out the problems in South Dakota. They got a much smaller number than what USDA had. However, that number is still 7 bushel better than the 3-year average.
Yeah, so you're right. Lots of news, lots of social media posts this week related to that crop tour. It happens every year. People get out and we see a flood of information, I guess. Even though it's starting on two ends of the Corn Belt, Ohio and South Dakota, the crop tour largely saw what we expect to be the worst crops of the week. And so I think they'll get better as they move towards the center of the country. And, you know, in South Dakota, as you mentioned, you know, down from where USDA is on a yield estimate, but, you know, still higher than the last couple of years. And they only do portions of the state. USDA is doing the whole state, even though like most of the soybeans and corn are growing on the east side of South Dakota. But, you know, so again, it's one of those things, big crop, but maybe not as optimistic as what USDA was. And then of course on the Ohio side, you know, again, a pretty sizable corn crop. USDA's down 10 bushels to the acre. The crop tour didn't find all that much of a change in yields. And so I will remind folks that the hardest hit area of Ohio was the eastern side, and the crop tour didn't go into the eastern and southern portions of the state. So, you know, maybe some influence and changes there. But again, lots of information coming out. There'll be more information this week. The market kind of, I think, reacted a little bit positive during the day yesterday as some of these social media posts were coming out about what they were seeing. But the overnight trade wasn't impressed at all. I think they just kind of recognized, yeah, this is still a very large crop.
On the consumption side, what have we seen recently and what are your concerns either for corn or soybean?
Well, so I'll start with soybeans because we had the National Oilseed Processors Association report last week for, you know, soybean crush. We continue to see very, very strong crush margins. The expectations were very large for soybean crush, so this isn't anything of a surprise. But on the soybean oil stocks numbers or an implied use for the month of July, you know, it came in well above expectations and a record volume for any month, not just July. And so that has been something that I think has been lacking when we've been setting these record soybean crush numbers the last couple of months, is that the soybean oil demand number wasn't, you know, it was strong, but it wasn't as impressive as what the soybean crush numbers are. July, I think now we see, you know, an impressive soybean oil demand number to kind of match those strong crush numbers. So that was a positive. I think that's, you know, again, that was expected. We've built a lot of that price pressure in, and you could make the argument that, you know, even this summer we weren't meeting expectations, and that was what was leading to some of the deterioration in soybean price. But it's nice to see that soybean oil number kind of rebound a little bit. Same thing on the corn side. I'll switch over to corn here for a second. Ethanol production has been very strong and has been a bright spot of the, you know, the corn picture. USDA has a pretty solid corn ethanol number built into their old crop 2023-2024 balance sheets. We might get there. I still think maybe we have to revise it down just a little bit, but it's still a very solid corn ethanol number for this year and for next year as well. So it's exports where we've seen the struggles. However, U.S. commodities are now becoming a little bit more competitive on the global market. Here in soybeans, we are competitive. And so I think the next week or so, I hope to see some pretty sizable soybean export sales numbers and help, you know, shape up our new crop book of sales here.
What else have you been thinking about?
Well, so logistics issues have been kind of on my mind up front. We've got two things that are kind of starting to materialize that could have an impact on crop basis. You know, so I'll start first. You know, it's been kind of started to hit the news the last couple of days about, you know, a potential rail strike in Canada. Both railroads, the Canadian National Railway and then also the Canadian Pacific Kansas City Railroad, that was a merger last year of those two railroads. Both railroads have notified their workers and the unions, the railroad unions, that they intend to lock them out on Thursday. And on the reverse side, the unions have told their employees not to, you know, to strike, basically. So both sides are basically saying, we don't want to work with you. That creates an unhealthy dynamic in some cases from the standpoint that if at least you have one party that's willing to negotiate, then you can kind of find some type of common ground. But we've got two parties here that, you know, are signaling they don't really want to work with each other. And that potentially could start Thursday. Now, it's only for the Canadian side of the rail lines. However, it could have spillover effects into the U.S., lack of rail cars and things like that. This is coming at a time when we've got a very large spring wheat crop coming out of the ground, both in terms of the upper plains in the United States and in the Canadian prairies. You know, Canada's a big player in the wheat market. That could be an impact. The other issue is lower water levels on the Mississippi. Again, something we haven't talked about in almost a year, but our water levels are below, you know, kind of thresholds at this point. Still not as low as they were last October. But if we don't get some rain here in August and September, or, you know, what's left of August and September, we could be starting to approach some of those lows that we saw last year. Again, at a time when we've got a very large Midwest corn and soybean crop that we want to get to export destinations.
And then that'll cause the
basis to drop, to go up. Freight to go up, basis to go down. Producers and end users will see, you know, changes in their prices.
Well, that's another happy note as well, I suppose.
I don't know if I have. Like I said, last week I was surprised at how negative we all were, which, let's be real, economists aren't known for being happy people a lot of times. But I'm a happy person. I feel like I try to exude joy, but it's hard right now with the way the markets have panned out. And certainly the costs that producers have in both corn and soybean new crop.
Finally, after meeting last week, and you made the soybean presentation, the economist agreed that was the tougher of the two. Chad Hart made the corn presentation from Iowa State University. Are you all, relatively speaking, of the opinion that producers need to market this crop much sooner rather than later?
Yes. And, you know, I think not only are we, you know, convinced or, you know, think that producers need to start marketing early, but just have a plan. Think about how to manage storage. Interest rates are higher than what they've been in a long time. That has an added expense in storage cost. And putting grain in the bin and sitting it there for a year certainly adds a bunch of storage costs that you don't think are there, but certainly are. And that's another component that I think we all agree on is, you know, there's a lot of changing dynamics in the grain marketing space that we need to re-educate ourselves and others on as well.
Thank you much.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Ben Brown. He's an agricultural economist with FAPRI, the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute at the University of Missouri, and with Extension. Yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture released the weekly crop progress report. It shows 30% of the corn crop around the nation has dented, 26% is the five-year average, 5% of the crop has now matured. The condition of the crop is said to be the same this week as last week, at 51% good and 16% excellent. 81% of the soybeans have set pods this week, 80% is the five-year average. The condition of the crop, 54% good, 14% excellent. Combined, there's no change in the soybean crop, but when you look at them as separate categories, the crop has gotten slightly better this week than it was last week. Now let's turn our attention to the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour, where yesterday scouts were in Ohio and South Dakota. USDA had Ohio pegged at 188 bushels to the acre when it released its numbers earlier in the month. The Pro Farmer Tour puts the tour route at 183.29 bushels. You add 4.6 bushels to that for the variance, and you end up with 187.89 for the Ohio number. That compares again to the 188 USDA had. In South Dakota, things were a little different. USDA at 162, the tour routes at 155.5. You subtract 5.3 bushels, so the statewide tour for the South Dakota number should be about 150.21 bushels to the acre. Again, that's 12 bushels less than the 162 that USDA has been projecting. Nathaniel Warinsky with Indiana NAS now joins us from the road. He's in his home state, or at least where he lives and works at this point. Hi, Nathaniel. I hope you're having a great day there in Indiana on the crop tour.
Yeah, it is a good day. Been a good day, good tour so far, traveling through Ohio yesterday and in Indiana today.
Let's talk about what you saw yesterday in Ohio. Can you summarize your route for me?
We left Dublin, Ohio, kind of went a little north before dropping down south to get to Noblesville, Indiana. In Ohio, it was a more variable. It's still overall a strong yield is what we think we're going to see there, and what they think overall on the crop tour. But we saw some variability, anywhere from 102 to about 190 for corn yields. They measure 3-foot sections for soybeans and the pod counts. We had a one low pod count down there, 300 in a 3-foot section and going up towards 1900. So it's, like I said, some variability, but still looking strong on the yields in Ohio.
Could you identify what the problems or issues were in those 102 for the corn and the low pod count for the soybeans?
Yeah. So there is some disease in the low pod count. It was a low in that particular one. We had a plant that had no pods on it, it was a good legit plant. It's grown, there's blooms on it, but it just had no pods on it, so it contributed to a low overall pod count. So it isn't typical necessarily, but we found a spot still that looked typical, and sometimes it's just the plant you pull out. As far as the corn that looked low, it was low length of the cobs, not nothing particular, just the spot of the field, and there. Some groups did notice some disease though, and there's some pressure of the weather, dry weather throughout the state, and the heat as well in all that part of Ohio.
I assume as you move westward into Indiana, as you keep going west in Indiana, that things got better. Where did you start, and where are your dad heading to Bloomington from? I suppose that'll be in Illinois, but what's your route look like in Indiana?
Yeah, so this morning we started southeast of Indianapolis near the town of Shelbyville. If any of your listeners are familiar with that, so the southeast, and we kind of went, kind of made like a bowl or ladle around the southern part of Indianapolis, and now we're going straight. We'll go straight on Highway 36 into Illinois as we head to Bloomington.
And will you take a few? You'll take a few polls yet today in Illinois as well.
Correct. We'll take some samples in Illinois as we head into Bloomington.
What did the crop look like in Indiana that you've been into the fields for?
Oh. The crop in Indiana, it looks good. Good looking yields. We're looking really, we had some 200s yesterday. We're around 170s, 175 for corn. We pulled up 190 as well today. Soybean pods are looking good. 1,200 to 2,000 pod counts today. So things are looking really good overall. Good moisture for the crops that we're looking at. So just overall, it is looking good, kind of like what we're expecting based off of our reports from farmers and what we published just a couple of weeks ago in our first crop report.
Nathaniel Warinsky is traveling through Indiana on the eastern leg of the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour. Sherman Newland is on the western leg. He's with Risk Management Commodities. Hi, Sherman. Thanks for being with us. I take it you are running the same route you've run for several years this time around.
Yes. Yes. It's the same route we've had for quite a few years now, actually.
You're running from Grand Island, Nebraska to Lincoln, I take it. And you make a kind of an inverted U across there.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Yes.
All right, so what are you seeing?
Solid numbers. I mean, a lot of this stuff is irrigated that we've been into, you know, this morning here in Nebraska. The bean pod count is solidly higher over, you know, what we've had over last year. I mean, we're averaging 1,731 pods per 3x3 versus 1,382 last year, so quite a bit over last year. And then the corn side of it, I mean, better stands, better population. I mean, some of it's irrigated. We've had some not. We found one non-irrigated field. It was in the 250s. So you know, good numbers. We're seeing a lot of the last couple of stops have been a lot of earworm in the corn. I'm not sure, you know, what that's going to do to things, but it is cutting down on length just a little bit. But overall, solid numbers, very solid out here. Good color, nice day. It's like 69 degrees and overcast with a little breeze, so perfect weather for doing what we're doing.
Can you go back to a good weather actually yesterday for you and tell me about the numbers and what you really saw on your route, just your route specifically, in South Dakota?
South Dakota was, we talked early yesterday, so we didn't get a lot of stops in before you talked to us early. It was disappointing to start with, especially along Route 18. You know, I talked to a fella in that, you know, lives north of Sioux Falls. He sells seed, but he said they got in pretty early, but then they had a lot of water damage, and you could see it. The stand counts were really, really low in a lot of areas. So that really affected it. But as we got a little bit farther along and a little bit farther south, we got into some better numbers, you know, 160s to 170s. So it did improve in some areas from what we saw. And then in Nebraska, you know, a good, you know, again, nothing was irrigated at that point, but good solid numbers in the 160s, 170s, better stand counts, a little bit low. I mean, not as good as what we're seeing today. But you know, I guess more than anything, we, you know, South Dakota numbers were lower, but you know, we did see some prevent plant areas. We saw some holes, you know, you saw where they sowed some cover crop to fill in just to keep the weeds down. So, you know, that is out there, in South Dakota. You could definitely see where the, you know, they've had too much rain in those areas.
So to the west of Interstate 29, I'll just demarc it kind of that way. So not Iowa, and not Minnesota. In South Dakota, Nebraska, the routes you have run when what I'll term as the Western Corn Belt, better than the previous years you've run the same route or about the same?
South Dakota was lower. I think we're like 30 bushel off from last year. Nebraska, today Nebraska has been better than what we've seen in the past. So overall, I think Nebraska is going to end up with some really solid numbers from what we're seeing up here. And I hear, you know, if you go, you know, south more, you know, it's a little bit drier. And there's, but, you know, Chip was saying there's going to be some areas where you're going to see some hail damage. Now, we haven't seen any hail damage on our route today at all.
And then tomorrow, will you be running the same route you've run in the past?
Yes. Yes, we will. We'll be taking the second half of our route. So we'll be heading up to Spencer, Iowa, and see what that shows.
Thank you much, Sherman. Sherman Newlin is with Risk Management Commodities. He's on the western leg of the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour. They'll be updating their Nebraska and Indiana numbers this evening. That'll happen at about 8 o'clock. You can check out our website at willag.org, willag.org, not long after that. And I'll have those numbers updated within the website. In fact, all those numbers for the crop tour are there, kind of in an easy-to-use set of tables and charts. There's also some information about the average differences between the crop tour numbers and the final statewide numbers that come out from USDA NASS each year. And in one of the tables, I add those or subtract them, depending on which state it happens to be, back into the crop tour number so you can get a good guesstimate of how close USDA's August number at the moment is to the actual pro farmer number. And then at the end of the week, Brian Grady will join us. He is with Pro Farmer. We'll talk with him during the closing market report to get their national yields, which are different than the crop tour yields, in fact. So all of that happening this week, you can find those at willag.org, willag.org. Let's check the weather forecast now with Don Day. He's at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Hi, Don. Thanks for being with us. The Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour scouts are out and about. They've had a really good first couple of days this week. Not any rainfall to speak of. A little dewy in the morning, but the temperatures have been fantastic. Will they continue to work under such good conditions from, I don't know, South Dakota to Ohio?
Well, what's going to happen is the old back porch thermometer over the next 7 to 10 days is going to get a little bit of a workout. We are going to see these very comfortable temperatures start to change a bit. There's a lot of heat down into the southern plains, very hot temperatures across Texas, parts of Kansas, parts of Oklahoma, eastern New Mexico, lots of hundreds down there. Some of that heat's going to expand and go northeastward. So we are going to see temperatures get warmer here at the end of the week and into the weekend. And that's probably going to last through mid to late next week. But after that, we're looking at the potential for a pretty good cool down again coming late next week and next weekend. So the weekend after this one. And that has the potential to drop temperatures well below average. In fact, we're looking at some temperatures in the upper Great Lakes that could even be in the upper 30s. By that time frame. Now, we don't see any freezing temperatures or anything else like that, but we are going to see the relatively comfortable temperatures be replaced by some heat, followed up by another cool down.
And they'll be comfortable temperatures, I take it, through that Labor Day weekend then.
We could see Labor Day temperatures, Labor Day weekend temperatures in the 70s.
Nice. I think that would be great.
How's that?
That would be fantastic. Yeah. Hey, thank you. I appreciate it much.
Sure thing.
That's Don Day. He is with Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world, online, on demand, anytime you'd like. Our theme music is written, performed, and produced by Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.